The answer to the question everybody wants to know. LeBron, what's your decision?
Yeah! What's that sound? Did you just get fucking looked down again? How's that? Jesus, that's right. It's NBA Australia. How you going? I'm your host, James Clements. It's Wednesday, July 8th. But not really. It's Tuesday, July 7th when I'm recording this. Peek inside the curtain. Watch out. I'm a writer sometimes. Rolling Stone, Triple J, Junkie, Red Bull Mag. Literally whoever else wants to give me that sweet, sweet booze money. Here in Larry Armour Studio, surrounded by a new prop for Friday's show. I drove to Geelong today to get it just as well. Because Victoria's locked the fuck down in Melbourne at least. So dodge that bullet. Anyway, I'd usually be letting you know what's going on in the NBA. Who's doing what, where they're doing it, why they're doing all that dumb shit. But hey, 119 days without NBA basketball. And we're going to, get through to July 31. What do you reckon? We're going to get there? Fuck, who knows. Anyway, in the meantime, we're bringing on another special guest today to get us through. Well, look, special being the operative word. Yeah, that's right. We've had gold medal winners, NBA champions, platinum recording artists, AFL players, pro gamers. Last week we had TV, radio, and comedic star Dave Thornton. And this week we welcome on some guy I used to sit next to at work, Lakers fan Tim. Look, I'm as disappointed as you are. Top five reasons that Corona probably has the virus. Tim's probably number four, but look, he's here to talk about the 10-year anniversary of the decision. Hop in the NBA Australia time machine with the wild 2010 Celtics-Lakers finals as well. So that'll be fun, I reckon. Got a fair bit of news to smash through as well. There's some yeah-nahs. And top five is going to be built into the decision about the top five moments of the decision 10 years on and the top five repercussions. So that'll be nice. Tim, are you there with us? What do you reckon?
Hello. I've actually thought about this before because...
This is just the intro, Tim. Shut up. Jesus, come on.
No, listen. If you're Bill Simmons and you have guests like Will Smith and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Will Ferrell, I'm that fucking cunt Joe House that just shows up when he's got no one else booked. He's just mate from college. That's what I am. I'm that guy.
All right. Good job, Lakers fan, Tim. I'm glad that you're here with us. Jeez. Really should have booked someone better. This is episode 445 NBA Australia. Let's go.
This is Matthew Dellavedova, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
Watch out for the Shaq attack!
You better! Or you better watch out for the Rona attack if you're in Melbourne. Jesus Christ! Everybody settle the fuck down. Wear a mask. Just want to go to the pub. Tell you what. Anyway, let's start off today's show. The way we start every show here in NBA Australia. With the day, what is it, daily whip around? No, weekly whip around. Because it's a fucking weekly show at the moment. Tim, are you excited about the NBA coming back?
Not really.
Yeah, it's a bit on the nose, it feels like, right? What do we got? Skyrocketing cases across the US. We've got seven teams having to shut down practice facilities because either players or members of staff have come down with the Rona. And it does feel like it's like, I don't know, I feel like we might have bigger problems to deal with right now than whether or not Adam Silver and his cohort can get into a bullshit bubble at fucking Disney World. But anyway, look.
It feels like Arizona's sports here. We only have like 200 cases a day. Florida has 200 cases in every household.
That's right. Right, so in other news, Victor Oladipo, he's going to Orlando, Tim, but he's not going to play, which begs the question, why the fuck are you going to Orlando, Victor? Bit weird. And look, I'm fine with him sitting out. I don't care about that. Like, that's fine. Like, quick restart. Dude's coming back from, like, a knee injury. Leaves him at an elevated risk of soft tissue injuries. He's just missed a full year and... he's up for a new contract at the end of the next season, so you don't want to risk anything. So good on you, Victor. Don't know why he'd still go. Seems a bit weird. This is huge, though, for Philly and Miami. Indy look like a bit of a dangerous smoky, I reckon, but their ceiling now in a playoff series is much, much lower, I reckon, sans Victor. Like, they were good without him, obviously, all season, and by the time he came back, he actually threw a bit of a spanner in the works as they tried to figure out how to make him actually fit in. But you got to think the other teams in that 4-5-6 range in the East are pretty happy not to have to face an Indy team with him on the other side, so that's pretty good. What do you reckon about Victor, Tim? It's a bit of a... It's one of the biggest names so far to pull out. Easily the biggest, probably.
I've never heard of this guy. That's the problem.
Ah, jeez. Anyway.
Hello.
Your Los Angeles Lakers. Dwight is going and donating his salary. So are you happy that Dwight's going?
We can survive without Dwight. Like, honestly, like... But, actually, you know what? I was going to make a bunch of jokes, but it sounds like there's something legitimately horrible going on in his life. So, yeah, there's enough big men in our team, and AD just has to play a little bit more center. But I think he was going to do that in the playoffs anyway. So I feel fine about it.
But he's going, Tim. That's the thing. He's actually going.
Oh, hang on. Have I missed a hot memo?
Yes. Yes, you have. You've completely missed it.
Yeah, great. Well, don't delete that. Dwight is great. There wouldn't be a team without him, and he's going to be a valuable contributor. And there's a lot of wonderful things going on in his life.
That's right. We've got the jersey messages that the NBA and the NBAPA have agreed on, apparently. I, for one, can't wait for my custom jersey with group economics written on the back.
Yeah, some boardrooms come up with those things, and the headlock of Roger Mason Jr. to agree to them. And they're just totally whitewashed in every sense of the word. Like, here are the approved list of protests you can make. Fuck off.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Not much of a protest if you have to get the approved list from the fucking association. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. And I'm well aware you didn't ask for my opinion there. I just chimed in, but expect that to happen more often.
That's all right. I completely agree with that. I think it's complete bullshit. I mean, look, how many more? Okay, cool. I am a man. Yeah, sure. Anti-racist, ally, all right, stand up? What the fuck are we doing here? This is dumb. But look, I feel like the NBA is going to be doing as much as they can, but it is going to be very sanitized. When you've got fucking dipshits like fucking Tillman Frittata over there running shit in Houston anyway, should we be anyway surprised? No, fuck no. So... here we are. This is going to be a bit of a farce, but look, at least they get Black Lives Matter written down this side. This is really going to come down to the players taking a bit of ownership on this during broadcasts, before and after broadcasts, and actually really making their voices heard, because the NBA will sort of give this weird token sort of response, as you're seeing, and that'll make no fucking dent, but at least they'll say that they did something. So the players are the ones who are actually going to have to lead this a bit, I reckon. Tim, J.R. Smith is officially a Laker. Finally, fulfilling your lifelong dream of having J.R. Smith as a Los Angeles Laker. How do you feel about that?
Yes. How do you give a shirtless man a jersey? That's my biggest question at this point.
Also, I feel like your lifelong dream was running on the court at a Melbourne Tigers game drunk, and you did that in 1999. So.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, Brad Beal is also like, yeah, I'm going to travel with Washington to Orlando. I just don't know if I'm going to play. And everyone's like, okay, Brad, that's fucking weird. And now Brad Beal's done his shoulder. He's not actually going to play. Like, why bother, you know? Like, what's going to happen, Washington? He's out. What's the point? Half the Nets team's out. So, I don't know. It's all a bit up in the air, isn't it? Washington, there's shit. Brad Beal. Best of luck to you. And speaking of shitty teams, Tim, the shitty bubble. We talked about it on Friday's Yeah Nah video. And wow, do I still think it's a fuck shitty idea to get the Delete 8. D-Elite 8. See, Tim? See what I did there? It's a joke. It's a joke, Tim.
I did it.
And it's, you know, getting them all together to spread some germs on each other in Chicago. So that's good. That seems like a smart idea at this point, doesn't it? Let's get 8 more teams in a different shitty bubble. And it's the teams that no one wants to see. They can play against each other like it's a shitty summer league. Awesome. It's a great fucking idea. Stay the fuck home and play against your own G League team, you idiots. What are you doing? And finally, Tim, look, if I said this about you, what would your response be? Look, the relationship between me and Tim, it's never going to be perfect. But as long as we respect one another and share the same goals, That's what matters.
I would tell you to go fuck yourself.
We would very clearly still fucking hate each other, like we do now. 100% what people who hate each other say is what I would have taken for $100 there. Thanks, Alex. That's Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. They 100% fucking can't stand each other now. And Donovan Mitchell is probably like, Rudy, you French fuck, you got me the Rona. I'm going to stab you in the eye one time and you're asleep. Just saying.
Yeah, but catching coronavirus from someone in America is like catching herpes from you. So, me. Yeah, it's going to happen.
Yeah. If you walk near you, it's going to happen. But it's basically Shane Warne, Steve Waugh kind of level stuff, I feel like, now at this moment, you know? Where it's like, no, we're fine. Look, we're just working towards the same goal. It's like, no, you clearly fucking hate each other. Right. So I think that's kind of all the news. There's not actually been a giant amount going on at the moment. We have had those dropouts. Basically, it seems like a lot of the teams have shied away from naming players who have got the coronavirus, which seems smart. And also, you know, legal. So that's not a bad idea. But I don't know. Tim, there was one thing that happened last week. Tyler Johnson finally signed with Brooklyn. Sean Marks got his man. Were you psyched?
He needs to get, he's got Alan Crabbe, he's got Tyler Johnson, there's one more, I've forgotten, Otto Porter.
Yeah.
No, he got him too.
No, he didn't get Otto Porter eventually. Otto's...
He will.
He will eventually. So yeah, there's a whole bunch of, like, I don't know, campaign signed with the Suns. Awesome. Jalen Adams is replacing Trevor Ariza up there in Portland. Whatever. Not much going on. So, Tim, with all this in mind, do you want to go back in time 10 years real quick? We'll do some...
I've been waiting.
Well, first, do you want to do the decision, and then we'll talk 2010 finals. Sound good? All right, let's do that.
In this fall, man, this is very tough. In this fall, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach and join the Miami Heat.
Yes, NBA Australia. It'll be, I don't know, July 2010, and LeBron James has just gone on stage. In a purple and white check shirt. Bonobos, Tim. I reckon I've got that shirt. It's pretty good. But anyway.
You would have that fucking shirt. That shirt is, that's the worst part of that entire thing. Of course you have that shirt. And you know what? You'd look really bad in it.
I look great in that shirt in a grey suit. Weirdly though, LeBron was just wearing the shirt. Look. 10 years on from the decision, Tim, there was the great backstory piece by Don Van Natta on ESPN last week where they kind of jumped the gun on the anniversary by like 10 days, but hey, ESPN's got nothing better to do at the moment, so why the fuck not? What do you remember about the decision, Tim? I was off covering a press conference in Melbourne, and you were back at the office, I believe, hanging out. Right?
I was at home.
Oh, you're at home.
I should have been at the
classic,
office.
Classic.
I stayed home for the decision. I was pretty shocked, to be honest. Like, we didn't have the intel we do now. There's been a lot of great Brian Windhorst podcasts, and that insight into the near miss from the Bulls is fucking fascinating. If you're listening to this podcast, I suggest you pause and unsubscribe now and go listen to that instead. But I was pretty blown away. There was only one murmuring that morning in the infancy of Twitter and like what we heard in Australia that Miami was on the table. But I think we were all, I cannot remember, to be honest. It was sort of like Cleveland or New York for the longest time. But New York was dead by then. But it was just, oh my God, like the erection when we found out that Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, and LeBron were all going to be in the same team with LeBron wearing that fucking shirt. It was legit, like, where were you when Michael Jackson died? Where were you when LeBron made the decision? Where were you when we were in our second lockdown and we'll never be let outside again. Like, it was a legitimate moment. It was epic.
Yeah. I still remember on that day. So I was on the train back into the city from our office and sitting there thinking, I think I was messaging you even and saying, look, I think it's Chicago. Because we'd already learned that Bosch and Wade were going to be in Miami. And it didn't really seem entirely feasible that Miami were going to have enough cap space anyway to get it really done. And, I mean, this is the thing. You talk about the lack of information. That's exactly what it was. It's like we knew that Miami could probably carve out enough. In the end, they did have to take pay cuts and then take more pay cuts to fit Mike Miller and Udonis Haslam on there anyway. But
yep.
I was basically like, yeah, I think it's going to be Chicago. I feel like that makes a lot of sense. You got D. Rose. You got Joakim Noah. You've got a good team. They went on to win 62 fucking games anyway. And I was thinking Chicago, maybe New York, but probably back to Cleveland was my biggest guess. Because look, and this is what looms the most over this still, I think. We're about to do top five moments of the decision 10 years on. But I just expected it was going to be Cleveland because I just did not believe that he'd be sitting there on national TV telling Cleveland to go fuck themselves. And that's what happened. So,
yeah.
That was probably the biggest surprise that he dropped fucking Cleveland from a giant cliff and go, yeah, later, fucko, see us.
And that's what Cleveland thought too.
Exactly.
That was the shock. They were pretty convinced as well.
And that led to a infamous letter. So you mentioned Chicago coming very, very close. That was fascinating to read from Windy. It's pretty interesting to think that Chicago were like, yeah, look, we don't really want to commit to signing all three of you guys because we don't, A, think it's possible, and B, want to, really, because we've already got D-Rose, Noah, and if we can get two of you, like, that's a championship team, and I kind of agree with them. But it was pretty cool to hear, like, Chris Bosch's stories about Pat Riley dropping the Croin Royal bag with the seven rings on the table alongside his giant schlong, I assume, and Chris Bosch having a party at the W and then finding out that LeBron already had the penthouse booked and flew down to Miami to party that night, and then they had the rally the next day. So awesome stories to come out of it. And it is weird and fascinating to think back on the decision, Tim. When you message, because I'm sitting there watching fucking, look, I love Dan Kelly, but I did not want to be watching fucking Dan Kelly at 11 a.m. in the morning at Cherry Bar as Music Victoria announced some stuff. But I was frantically messaging you whilst drinking a beer at 11 a.m. in the morning, because that was fun, going, what the fuck is going on? And your message coming back saying, it's Miami, what the fuck? It was a shock, and it still is a shock. So, Tim, let's do the top five moments of the decision 10 years on.
Oh, it's top five, Susan.
We've already mentioned it. Number five, LeBron's shirt. Wow.
No, that's number one.
What a shirt.
That is number one.
Purple and white checks. Yeesh. Look, LeBron, you're in fucking front of, what, 10 million people. You're wearing Yacht Rock business casual. Get the fuck out of here. Jesus.
I know. Oh, I'm about to change the whole course of the National Basketball Association. I better wear a shirt like I work at Geico and or Medibank and fucking act like I'm some kind of white middle-aged man. I mean, you might be balding, dude, but you don't have to wear a shirt that a balding dude would wear. I hate that shirt.
It is. Look, I love that shirt because I've got one, as mentioned. But wow, not a great look. Not a great look. Number four, Jim Gray. Why the fuck was Jim Gray hosting this, Tim? He wasn't with ESPN. He's a CBS dude. Like, what the fuck? We can't get Michael Wilbon. We can't get Stu Scott. We can't get Stephen A. We've got Jim Gray, the guy from the
fascinating.
Golf. What the
that's
fuck?
That's the fascinating mechanics. Bad choice by LMRM or LRMR, LeBron's entourage. But that's what's fascinating about that program and what it might have led to is player empowerment. They picked that guy. It's on them.
So this is it. It turns out they chose Jim Gray because it was he and Ari Emanuel, the agent, big Hollywood power broker, who was basically Ari from Entourage was based on this guy, right? They ran into Mav Carter at the finals. They pitched them on the show. Jim Gray was there with them. And Jim's like, I'm your guy. And Mav's like, yes, you are my guy, Jim Gray. And ESPN was so desperate to get this broadcast. They're like, look, we'll sell you the hour. And then Mav Carter and co were like, yeah, nah, we'd rather just not pay for it. And ESPN are like, all right, you can have the hour for free, but no Jim Gray. And Mav Carter's like, no. And then ESPN are like, all right, Jim Gray it is. That's art of the deal, baby, right there. Bang! Morons. But look, it got $2 million donated to the Boys and Girls Club of Kids Club of America, whatever the fuck it is. But yeah, speaking of which, number three, the kids. That was fucking weird. LeBron sitting in some weird hall, all echoey as fuck, surrounded by like 25 weird-looking kids as he's going, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach. And those kids going, do I get like $100? What's fucking going on here? Like in Connecticut of all places. What the fuck was that, Tim? What were those kids doing?
You think you might have learned from that to not have all these weird children in your press releases, but yet you continue to do so.
Hey, I just take after my two heroes, Michael Jackson and LeBron James. What I do. Number two, the weird way LeBron phrased it. I mentioned it. I'm taking my talents to South Beach. That launched a million dumb fucks saying that when going to the beach and slightly less dumb fucks saying that about going down on someone or going to the shops. or whatever. The worst part was that it was a ripoff from a 17-year-old Kobe.
Yeah, apparently it was just, I didn't know that. Apparently it was a homage.
I've decided I'm taking my talent to the NBA.
Bad choice.
Weird. Just, it was confusing and it made no sense. And he learned his lesson because, wow, did he do it much better the next couple of times around.
Yeah, and Paul Pierce had a field day with that fucking thing. That was the next 5 years of content for Paul.
He's still dining off that. And, of course, I mentioned it right at the fucking start here. Number one.
Comic Sans?
No. That's a repercussion. This is of the decision. The sheer disdain that this entire process showed for Cleveland. That's right, Stephen A. Smith. For Cleveland.
Cleveland?
Is that right? Cleveland?
Cleveland.
Yeah, that's right. Cleveland.
Cleveland.
Yeah. It's remarkable. Looking back, it's even more remarkable that they were like, yeah, this seems like a good idea to break up with Cleveland live on telly and run a stake through their collective heart. Wow. It's remarkably cruel and brutal in the moment. And 10 years on, it's still remarkably cruel and brutal for no real good reason beyond LeBron wanting to take ownership of letting people know where he's going to go. It's fucking weird and crazy, right?
They won a championship. We know more now than we did then. They're fine.
Righto. 10 years on, it was just an absolute fucking shocker. And to see that happen to Cleveland live on air was crazy and funny and hilarious. Right. Next up then, the top five repercussions of the decision after the decision.
Oh, it's top five, Susan.
Oh, it's top five,
oh,
Susan.
It's top five, Susan.
Number five, Tim. The real shooting of Stephen A. Smith.
Cleveland.
Stay off the weed.
Into the stratosphere. Like, he was a big mouth talking head for years, but no one took him seriously. No one really takes him seriously now.
We have been hoodwinked, bamboozled, led astray, run amok, and flat out deceived.
But for him to be able to lean back on reporting this basically first, that LeBron was going there with Bosch and Wade, just gave him enough credibility that the next 10 years of his career saw him turn into, what, the highest paid media personality on ESPN by far, and one of the, you know, more famous sports media personalities ever. So this was really, I feel like, the blossoming, the maturation of Stephen A. Smith. This is what basically led to what we have now.
Say, I don't agree with the part about me being horny all hours of the day. Few hours in the day, yes, but not all hours of the day. I digress.
Number four then, how hated the Heat were was a crazy, another repercussion, right? They were fucked after 4 years, right? They go to four straight finals, but it's amazing just how hated they were in that first year, Tim. Do you remember that? And wasn't it fun? But the best part was, you kind of mentioned this. It also led that, how hated they were after the way that they did the decision, how much LeBron was personally hated, really led into this redemption narrative arc and LeBron going back to Cleveland, which is fucking crazy to think about, because would you have ever thought in 2010, Tim, oh, it's cool, he'll be back in Cleveland literally in 2014. Like, that's fucking crazy, isn't it?
Would you have thought that in 2010, Americans were ready to cheer on a German over anybody else, or 2011? That anyone would be ready to cheer on a German instead of anyone else. That's a sign of how hated that man had become. And it was great. I don't even like Dirk or Dallas, and I enjoyed the whole process.
Yeah, it was awesome. And it was crazy how hated it was. Everywhere they went, they were booed. Everywhere, literally everywhere. It's crazy. Number three, I feel like one of the repercussions after the decision was that it let basically Kevin Durant and the Warriors off the hook. You know, because nothing they ever did was as bad as the decision. KD probably, and I'm not even going to say arguably, but the way KD left OKC to go to the Warriors, to leave the team that had drafted him for the team that had won 73 games the year before and beaten his team in the Western Conference Finals the year before, for him to do that was all 100% made possible by the decision. Even though that's a worse move, I think, than LeBron going on telly and going, fuck you, Cleveland, going to Miami. Because that's literally all LeBron really did, right? Kevin Durant, though, really fucking stabbed OKC in the back. And it's a much more snake move.
KD, that's the counterpoint. KD made LeBron look good because what he did didn't seem so bad. I would go the other way. I think KD is going to live. It's going to take a lot longer for KD to live that down than, well, LeBron. It literally took 5 years because he won a championship in Cleveland. But yes, it paved the way, but then KD paved the way for LeBron's redemption.
Yeah, good call. Number two, the repercussions after this is just fucking hilarious. Not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven. The repercussion after the decision of the rally was just, A, it's given us like just an absolute shit ton of jokes because no, it wasn't seven or six or five or four or even three, LeBron. It was actually just two. I enjoyed that. They basically took a shit on the rest of the NBA and Cleveland. Miami, just usually a really buttoned down, chilled out franchise, fucking lost their mind. Pat Riley is just devastated in the stands going, what the fuck is happening, you idiots? And wow, the hubris that built up was amazing to see come crashing down over their heads. I was pretty happy with that.
I've got a hot take on this that I can't believe hasn't come up before. When Shaq went to Miami in 2004-ish, they had a parade with Will Smith, who introduced Shaq, and he walked on stage and promised a championship, and everyone thought it was awesome, and it's never been brought up since. Why do we kill those guys for that day? Why?
Not two, not three, not four,
that's
not
the problem.
Five, not six, not seven. I feel like celebrating the championships, these seven championships that you've not yet won before you've won one, was basically why they were so hated. And really led into like the absolute overflow of appreciation for Dirk in 2011 as well, right? Because everybody got behind Dallas. It's like, yeah, you know what?
Yeah.
Fuck the Heat. Let's go, Dallas. Yeah. And it was awesome to see
that
them
flu
win.
Blue bullshit. The exactly. Coughing bullshit.
Yeah. Speaking of which, all right, number one, insane stuff. Dan Gilbert's insane Unabomber fucking Comic Sans letter trashing LeBron was like, it was like you're like a year, like a dumped year eight kid writing a letter who's just been dumped, you know, just fucking letting it all out. The fact that this man, this grown-ass man who runs a business that, you know, employs thousands upon thousands of people, probably using predatory loans to make his money, whatever. But for him to write that letter is just the funniest fucking thing in the world. And it's one of the more inexplicable things, I think, to come out of the decision. Like, do you think that'll ever come close to happening again, Tim?
No, and it just made LeBron look better and better. Listen, Dan Gilbert's a piece of shit. He's Donald Sterling-like. He has exploited people to climb, but the worst thing he's ever done is use, by far, unquestionably, if you ask anybody, is use Comic Sans in that letter. Like, it's clear he doesn't listen to his PR team, his designers. It's clear he ignores the people in his business who would guide him through such a terrible decision. Never mind what he said in the letter. He used Comic Sans, uppercase. What on earth? This wasn't the 90s. This was 2010. There was all Futura, Impact, Helvetica New was the big deal at the time, Geneva, Times New Roman, Ariel. There were so many options. And he went with Comic Sans. And I will never, ever forgive him for the terrible things he's done to America and beyond.
It literally, it's never been explained. Why the fuck was it Comic Sans, you absolute peanut?
That the moment didn't call for it.
Makes no sense. Like, you want to be taken seriously. You're using like, who do you think that makes look like a fucking clown, you idiot? Jesus. Anyway, all right, but mainly, the entire thing about the decision was, and this is what happened, right? It put the power of decision-making really just into the hands of the athletes and, I mean, also some of their fucking dickhead mates who thought it'd be a good idea to make a big deal out of some of those decisions sometimes. But still, like, just think, a year later, remember this, Tim, when, like, KD re-signed with OKC and it was just like a tweet or whatever and everyone's like, see, that's how you do it. That's how you do it with class. And then 4 more years later, like, KD's like, fuck you, OKC, I'm leaving, and had like a delegation from a million different teams come visit him in the fucking Hamptons, right? And then decide to join a 73-win team that had just fucking beaten him in the playoffs. But like, this was the nail in the coffin, really, for anyone who wasn't the player really dictating what would happen with that player, I feel like, apart from Blake Griffin. Because he just got fucked over. But seriously, think about it. Like, we saw Melo force his way out of Denver. Dwight fucks his way out of Orlando. Then LA. Then Houston. Then Atlanta. Then Charlotte. Then Washington. CP3 finagles his way to the Clippers. Then the Rockets. And then kind of gets shafted and kicked to the curb in OKC. But at the same time, he got paid, you know? LeBron goes back to Cleveland, obviously. And then goes and just fucks off to the Lakers. KD does his coward sneak to Golden State. LaMarcus Aldridge basically kind of did the same thing, right? Remember his hosting of free agency meetings with LA and co, and the Lakers shit the bed with LaMarcus Aldridge? To be honest, that's a bullet dodged.
Oh, my God. What a bleak season where he was the star recruit in free agency.
Paul George got out of Indy because he made it pretty clear he wasn't going to hang out with those dudes. Then signs an extension with OKC and then says, see ya, thanks for everything. Bye. Kyrie out of Cleveland. I want my own team. I've got my own team. Fuck you, Boston. I'm going to another team. And goes to Brooklyn. KD does the same thing, leaves to make his own destiny in Brooklyn. Jimmy Butler argues his way out of Chicago, mini, then Philly. Kawhi. Forces his way out of fucking San Antonio, then does the same thing, basically out of Toronto, and cops zero blame from Toronto because he just got them a title. And then obviously AD to the Lakers. Like, it doesn't really matter if a team has cap space or not anymore, right? If the player's good enough and they want to go there, it's going to happen. Again, unless you're Blake Griffin. So, but
it's cyclical. Like, what the caveat, Kawhi is taking it to a new level of mastery, but I think the most terrific cases of Kawhi and AD have come with a king level of draft picks. And if that blows up in either or both of their faces, it might like bring that back a little bit. But, yeah, do you think the decision is aging well in that respect?
This leads us very nicely into the third year now. So let's do a couple more year nows about the decision then. So number one, was LeBron's time?
Oh, wow. They were the first ones were year nows? I wasn't playing the game properly.
Well, no, it wasn't. This is actually now year nows. So year nows, was LeBron's time in Miami the most perfectly balanced and retroactively kind of ideal move ever? Like, they win two, and I don't think they should have won more, but I also don't think they should have won less. Yeah, nah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they probably should have been.
They got pants by San Antonio.
Yeah, they should have probably beaten Dallas, but also should not have beaten the Spurs in 2013. Like, it took that stupid Ray Allen shot. So two titles kind of feels right, right?
Yeah, I look at Ray Allen's shot these days as more of a decision to remove Tim Duncan from the game briefly as the biggest game changer in that moment. Yeah, I agree completely. Like, as if they weren't going to beat OKC.
Yeah.
My fucking God, that was a beatable team. And it was perfect. LeBron's often put it as going to college for 4 years because he never got to. It's kind of exactly what it was, right? He grew and developed and learned more from a different atmosphere and then brought it back home. It was perfect.
Yep. Checks out. Yeah, the Ray Allen shot is actually really the Chris Bosh rebound. That's how it goes. So there you go. Next, would they have won more titles if LeBron had actually stayed in Miami then?
That's the brilliant thing he's always done. It's been as tactical about the roster as it has been about any other marketing or trending upward decision. Like, he had two aging guys versus an up-and-coming guy in Kyrie and the ability to trade for another one. It was what every player should do. It was brilliant.
Yeah, cool. Well, name me one awesome D-Wade moment from 2014 onwards. Like, Chris Bosh is now doing betting commercials. Like, come on, man. Of course.
In Australia, no less.
Yeah. There was no way for
Australian
them
betting commercials.
No way for them to get any sort of young talent, let alone Kyrie Irving level talent. Then you see it in every LeBron stint and the Warriors stints, right? Like, you hit 4 or 5 straight years of finals and your cupboard is fucking bare. Like, there's nothing there because you've just traded all the way for those shots. So good on him. But finally.
And he's done it to the Lakers as well.
Oh, this is the thing that you're going to be seeing there going, oh, who are they going to trade Kyle Kuzma for, bro? It's like, well, maybe you should keep a hold of him. I don't know. But the final one, this is the decision-related one. The decision, was it ultimately good for LeBron and for NBA players in general? Yeah, no.
Yeah, I think it's aging really well. It was the first step that LRMR, LeBron, Rich, Maverick, and who's the other? Ringo? It could literally be Ringo stuff.
But yeah, look, it still smells awesome. A bit weird, right? But like the fucking over of Cleveland, but at the same time, it's Cleveland.
Cleveland!
So they can deal with it. But it's still harsh. It was handled badly, but still. It all worked out for the best.
Handled badly, but still a great idea, like, in the scheme of things. And, yeah, it poorly produced, which is my biggest issue with the whole fucking thing. You know, bad host, bad shirt. But ultimately, a genius move and the first of many very clever moves by that group of people.
Yeah, it all checks out. Right, well, time machine time again. Let's go back to 2010 once more. Oh. Wow, what a time it was, 2010. So hey, where did you watch these Lakers-Celtics games, Tim? Because this is the Lakers-Celtics final of 2010. The last game is June 17. It's a Thursday, I think, in Australia. I was at work.
Yeah.
Surprise twist. You definitely were not. did you watch? You watched all of them, I remember. Like, you weren't in the office, I don't think, for any of them.
Correct.
So what do you remember from this series just in general? Game one, Kobe crushes it, 30 points, 23-14 for Powell. They win that pretty handily in LA. Then game two, Boston split on the back of Ray Allen, breaking the finals record for threes with eight.
Anyone can hit a couple of threes. That wasn't really anything.
I'm going to talk about Ray a little bit later too. 32 points, Ray ends up finishing there. Game three back in Boston. Fish goes crazy in the fourth. Odom and Powell just fucking completely save Kobe's ass in this one as well. Fish has 16 in this game. It's absolutely nuts. Ray Allen backs up.
11 in the fourth, I think.
Yeah, 11 in the fourth quarter. It's fucking wild. Ray Allen backs up the breaking the finals record by going 0-13. Kobe has 29-29, but really fun game though. It's like a 2-point game with 2 minutes left and it's wildly back and forth. Game four is the famous Shrek and Donkey game. Big Baby and Nate Robinson, the bench for the Celtics just leads the comeback. It's fucking wild to rewatch that one too. I love Big Baby. I love Nate Rob. It's a great game to rewatch just because it's so fucking improbable and just bonkers. And Big Baby just with that big fucking baby drool hanging out of his mouth. Game five is an unreal game. Kobe goes fucking nuts in the third quarter. It's wildly entertaining.
Yeah, and Boston won that game.
Yeah, and then Boston, yeah, that's it. Like, Kobe goes fucking nuts, but they still win. Game six, Lakers belt them back in LA, and then we come to game seven, which is really hinges a lot, I feel, and this is what we're going to argue about, I feel, like a lot. In the first quarter of game six, Perk tears an ACL.
Oh, and God.
It's like a balloon deflating in their game six, and they just look completely discombobulated. It's one of those knocks on Doc. You're like, really? You lose the plotting, mouth-breathing center, and suddenly you just get shit-pumped. Okay, cool. But then game seven, the Celtics come out fucking wilding and absolutely flog the Lakers in the first half. They're crushing it. They're up 13 in the third quarter, and then, Tim, I can feel your boner rising. It's horrifying. Powell gets going. She just runs out of gas. Odom has these little takeover bits. Fisher hits some ridiculous bullshit. But who is it? Queensbridge! Ron Artest. Now Metal World Peace. There's like a 9-0 run between 7:30 left and 3 minutes 40 left. Basically weirds out this game completely. 57-55 in the fourth quarter. There's just defense everywhere. Lakers get a stranglehold, come flying back. They're down 13, 9-0 run. Just keeps going back and forth. And the Lakers get the lead. The Lakers stay in the lead.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last minute 30 is absolutely fucking crazy. This is a game seven of the NBA Finals, Tim. And it comes down to the last minute 30 after Boston have shit the bed, crapped away a massive lead. Kobe's not doing fucking anything except for rebound and get free throws. But wow. Sheed hits a three. Artest hits a three. Flexes down the court. That gives him 20, I think, at that point. I think Ray Allen hits a three. Up until that point, it had been 3 of 39 outside of his eight makes in game two. Gasol gets an offensive rebound over Rondo, pass to Kobe, free throws. Rondo hits a three. It's a 2-point game with 13 seconds left. And Machine, Sasha, the man with the girl's name who fucking gave a length to Maria Sharapova, hits a couple of clutch-ass free throws, and it's game over. Kobe in the confetti. Beautiful stuff. His final ring. Crazy game. Absolutely bonkers game. What do you remember from it?
I thought you'd been setting me up to bone me the whole time and make some ridiculous claim.
Well, my claim still stands. Boston should have won this game and didn't because they had old-ass Rasheed Wallace out there for 35 minutes instead of Kendrick Perkins actually helping them rebound a little bit. They got out-rebounded 53-40. The Lakers set a finals record with 23 offensive rebounds. Pau Gasol had 9 offensive rebounds, Tim. He ends up with a 19-18. He was fucking incredible. I love this.
He had the will to win. He dominated Dwight the year before, and then he just fucking dominated Game 7. He also had 18 rebounds in Game 1, I think.
Yeah, he was a gun.
He's a beast. You know what happened? You know what no one talks about? Everyone's been drinking too much of the Doc Rivers tea about they would have won if they had Kendrick. Never mind the fact we didn't have Andrew Bynum for two halves of the series, and that Kendrick Perkins was traded like 12 games into the next season. He was apparently the key to a championship that they suddenly didn't need anymore for Jeff fucking Green. Anyway, I'll tell you what happened in Game 7. This is what nobody talks about. People want to talk about, oh, Kobe wasn't that good in that game. Or do you know who wasn't good in that game? Kevin Garnett. Kevin Garnett shit the bed and was useless and was no point guarding, which means Ray Allen had no space, which means he sucked all season. All series, apart from one game. And Kevin Garnett was fucking useless. He's the one that should have blocked out Pau Gasol from ripping down those boards. He's the one responsible for defending everybody, apparently, in the Ubuntu and all that fucking Boston Celtics culture shit. Kevin Garnett shit the bed. And no one ever talks about it. He sucked. And that's why the Boston Celtics lost.
Look, I can't argue with this because having rewatched most of the series back, you're like, yeah, cool. So Kendrick Perkins is out. You've got old ass Rasheed Wallace. She gets 8 rebounds in this game. KG has 3 rebounds. I kind of feel like despite the knee injury the year before, we probably could have gotten a little bit more out of Kevin there, you know?
Yeah. That's what Doc Rivers is a master salesman.
I'm using a royal we there as well. I'm not supporting Boston here by any fucking stretch of the imagination, but 17-3, 4 blocks. He was amazing at points, and there were like different parts of this game where he finally gets a bit of his offense going. But there is like zero excuse for the rebounding, and you see him just being dragged away from the basket a lot on defense, which is like it's a lot of Odom, and like Pau just beats him. Just beats him into a fucking pulp. And you're like, dude, I don't know. This is why my argument has always been Pau deserved finals MVP of this series, not Kobe. So he averaged 28 points a game. Yeah. On a million fucking shots. Horrifyingly ineffective. He goes 6-24 in this final game. Pau was unstoppable all fucking series. I loved it. It was a man's series from Pau. The El Spinato. The man who so many had doubted, he came out, put his giant Spanish nuts on the line, and everyone went, wow, those are fucking sweaty and hairy. Pau, would you put those the fuck away? There's children here, Pau. And he's like, hey, is it me, Pau? Because apparently he's Italian.
Yeah.
Anyway, but
they
still.
They are pasty testicles, gross, hairy, pasty testicles.
But Ray Allen, horrible in this game as well. Pierce, look, he had a couple of big moments. Rondo. Just,
no, fuck that. Derek Fisher outplayed Ray Allen. Derek Fisher outplayed Ray Allen. I know one's a point guard, one's a shooting guard, but he outplayed him all season, all series.
But it's just such a crazy game with so many back and forths. And then for Odom to sort of really get going, you realize that every time he brought the ball up, you're like, is Lamar Odom the best point guard on this Lakers team? Like, holy shit.
Yes.
And he was. He was fucking incredible.
Dude
only had 7-7, but the way he impacted the game at points, especially during the second and third quarters, to really stop this from like really getting away from them, I feel like was super fucking important. But yeah, man, like the Celtics just zero offense going. They got nothing from the bench. I mean, Big Baby did a little bit of there, but I mean, he's just a burst of energy and there's nothing else. As I mentioned, I think my biggest recollection of this game and then rewatching it, you can literally see the wall that Rasheed runs into. You're just like, oh, okay, so now he's gassed. He's done. And he is. And he hits a 3, like, right at the end in that last minute 30 to get that last spiked run going. But he had missed every 3 before that. Had done some good things here and there, but it's just tough. And it's tough to sort of go, yeah, look, Bynum was back, played 18 minutes. What, they kept him to like 10 minutes per half, right? I think that's what I remember. So they're like half a Bynum. Boston don't have Perk. I feel like the rebounding battle is probably a little bit different. And if they control the ball a little bit more, Boston probably win. But then they didn't. So good job, Lakers. I always sort of see this as a weird... Like, Lakers fans love the three-peat team. And I feel like they really kind of short shrift their own sort of Kobe Pau teams.
We have higher standards.
So three straight finals, you go, what, 8, 9, 10. The thing is, and this is what I brought up, like I was watching, I think we did the 08 finals in NBA Australia Time Machine a little while ago, and they get absolutely shit pumped in game 6. And then in the 2011 playoffs, they get absolutely shit pumped either way. So I feel like that might be a little bit of the, like the bookends of those two giant shit pumpings. Might be just a bad taste in the mouth, perhaps, for the Lakers fans going, oh, I mean, that was good, but it really peaked 9 and 10, and that was kind of it. So 8 and 11 sort of get left by the wayside. It's pretty weird, but anyway.
It's a good theory.
I mean, how do you feel about it all? Like, how do you feel about those two titles?
Well, I mean, so many things. I honestly thought you were going to ambush me. I've been in a really, like, battle-ready mode since you messaged me last week about this, thinking you were going to try and troll me. But so many things are said were glorious. Powell was a beast. And Powell was a beast against Dwight Howard. I mentioned that just slightly before, the year before. He owned Dwight Howard. He was just stronger, hungrier, and, like, better around the rim. And I think without those two titles, we wonder if Pau Gasol, I wonder if Pau Gasol maybe looks, we look at him more like a Marc Gasol. But I agree with everything you said. I think that there's a lot of Doc Rivers' marketing specialty. He's done so well, and he always has, at selling this idea that they were injured in 09 and Perk is the only reason they lost in 2011 and otherwise we'd be looking at a three-peat. But you're right. There's something about that team that we don't like as much. I guess there's so much personality on the three-peat of Shaq and Kobe, and then there's so much personality in Magic Johnson and the just burst of the rebirth of the NBA legacy there. I don't know. It's not quite as gravitating as the team. I feel the same way. Like, we won two titles and we love that team, but, like, we're so spoiled that it's less of a thing. But this is where everyone forgets about that series and why it was so important for LA to win. We would have got none of the following things if Boston had won. Run our first press conference. Fucking glorious. We wouldn't have got Pau Gasol cemented Hall of Fame career. Kobe wouldn't have been all about that Shaq lick my ass, all that sort of great stuff. And Ray Allen wouldn't have gone to Miami and started that whole new thing. We wouldn't have gotten the three-pointer in against the Spurs. The zeitgeist of Lakers winning was far more important than any bullshit Celtics, Kendrick, Perkins, only won game 4 because the two scrubs on the bench playing out of their fucking mind. Crap narrative. Kendrick fucking Perkins. Are you kidding me? This was important for the health of the NBA, for the Lakers to win that playoff, and a beautiful revenge after legitimately getting pantsed in 2008. My God.
Yeah.
That was a panting.
It really was. So, Perk, I still, like, I mean, for all of my disdain for his talking headedness, rebounding-wise, I'm still going to stand by the idea that he would have made a big difference.
Why? What were his averages before that? I think Pau out-rebounded him anyway.
Yeah, I mean, he only had, what, 3 in game 1, which they lose, but 6 in game 2, they win, 11 in game 3, 7-7 in games 4 and 5, and then obviously he's injured in game 6. But I'm not going to take it away from them. It is weird, though, because KG, like, it's this series and, like, watching it so intently and then watching 2012, the Eastern Conference Finals, and just sort of seeing just this slight decline. It's just so fucking noticeable, and it kind of sucks, but he was such a fucking warrior at the same time. Hurts that he didn't really show up and kick some ass and take some fucking names. Like,
yeah, it was noticeable to everyone except for Billy King, who was licking his lips, waited 2 years and then traded the entire franchise to him and shitty pants Paul Pierce. That's the problem. Why didn't Paul Pierce think about shitting himself in 2010? They might have won the whole thing.
Maybe. This checks out. All right, so how about the old NBA Australia Awards? That's not a knife That's a knife. The NBA Australia approved performance of the night.
That's not a knife. That's a knife.
We've already talked about his giant Spanish ghoulies. 19 points, 18 rebounds. 4 assists and 2 blocks. What a fucking game from El Spinato. 42 minutes, gets him over the hump, is robbed, I tell you, robbed of finals MVP. Mm. So, game 1, 23 and 14, 25 and 8 in game 2, 13 and 10 in game 3, 21 and 6 with 3 and 2 in game 4, 12 and 12 game 5, 17 and 13 and 9, an almost triple-double in a crucial game 6, and then 19 and 18 to box it all out with 4 assists, shoot 6-16 in this game, but really, I feel like the biggest argument for the finals MVP for Powell is, like, there is no fucking chance in hell without him they win. Kobe is off this entire series. Like, it's not Ray Allen off, but it's off. So, but Jimmy averaged 28. It's like, yeah, he shot like shit. And boy, howdy, in game 7 did he force this. He forced this like he did in Colorado, you know what I'm saying? Jesus Christ. Like,
he forced it like he fought.
No. So the point is, just the shot, you know, the horrible shooting. So 9 and 19 in game 6, 6 of 24 in this one for Kobe. Without Powell, just being a rock. And every time they looked like they were sort of like a bit bumbly, a bit weird. Game 3, as I mentioned, with Fish, Powell also hits like a couple of really awesome little runners in the paint. There's a great little backup. There's also his weird travel that he has at the end of this game. But he gets the 2 points, keeps them up. But he always was there, always scoring, and just never really put a foot wrong while Kobe was trying his hardest to shoot them out of the game. So good job, Pau. I feel like that's the NBA Australia-approved performance of the night. He's my finals MVP. He was fucking great. And if Boston had have actually eked this out, they would have had a fucking really rough time deciding who won that one, I think. Because no one on the Celtics team really covered themselves in glory that entire run. So I don't know. It's tough. But anyway, that very...
Probably Nate Robinson's probably shooing at
maybe,
that point.
Maybe Big Baby. I don't know. How do you feel about that, Pau? Is that the NBA Australia approved performance line for Tim?
I think if your opponent goes down, as Kendrick did, what you really don't want is for that player to then mail it in. Like if Pau had 4 points and 5 boards in a loss, like, against who? You know, like, that's unacceptable. So, yeah, he had a monster game, and, yeah, Kendrick was out, but there's so many situations, people like Amare Stoudemire and Chris Bosh, who wouldn't just then elevate and take advantage and eat everyone alive. So I agree. But in a 50-50 situation, which I still think this is, the finals MVP always goes to the superstar, unless it's just a resoundingly better performance by someone else, like Tony Parker or Iggy. So I'm not surprised. I don't think Powell was robbed. I think he was close. But when it comes down to that, even pegging like that, and Kobe, the first thing he did in his victory speech was thank Powell. He's a man of honour.
Meanwhile, Ron
aside from Ron Colorado dips and troughs,
Ron was out there thanking his therapist. So maybe the approved performance of the night should have actually gone to Medal of Peace for all
on
of
and off court combined. Post,
yeah, he was incredible in game 7, drops a 20, like hits some massive shots. And good on him. Like, he goes 2 of 7 from 3, but god damn, he was good. 5 steals, 20 points. It was huge. Speaking of keeping them afloat, like, Ron Artest was huge in that. And speaking of huge, like, to shit on KG, you're like, yeah, man, get some more rebounds. At the same time, he's going up against fucking 7 foot Andrew Bynum, 7 foot Pau Gasol, 7 foot Lamar Odom. Like, that was a big fucking team. Like, Kobe out
great
there.
Roster.
Kobe out there getting 15 rebounds in game 7. Meta World Peace is not small either. What's he, like 6'8"? So, huge roster. Absolutely fucking gigantic. So, yeah, I don't want to shit on KG too much. But who I do want to shit on is...
Spud of the night.
Oh, Ray Allen. What are you doing, mate? Spent most of the series missing every 3 he took. Or setting a finals record for making 3s. Like, Seriously, he went 0 of 2 in game 1, 8 in game 2. He went 0 for 8 in game 3. Missed all 8 that he took across games 4 and 5. Hit 2 of 5 in game 6 and 2 of 7 in game 7. So outside of game 2, until he hit his last shot, he was actually 3 of 39 from 3. Holy fucking shit. So he ends up 12 of 41 overall. He hits his career average, 16 of 41, give or take a couple here or there. Celtics are probably in games 1 and 3 a little bit more. But he is absolutely horrible just in general, Tim.
Yeah, he also had one job, Ray.
He committed 2 3-shot fouls on Kobe as well in game 7. He missed 16 straight threes at one point in the series. It's fucking crazy. He missed a free throw with 7 minutes left of game 7, his first of the entire finals. What the fuck are you doing, Ray?
Yeah.
Maybe get
and
out
Ray
of,
could still
get
out go ahead,
the,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's
sorry.
Right. Get out of the Twitter DMs, Ray, and get on the fucking court.
Yeah.
You fucking weirdo.
Don't worry about shaving your horseshoe every 30 minutes so no one knows how bald you truly are. The other thing he could do, and he was doing it still in the, well, he was doing it really well in the latter ends of his career, was driving. He could drive and finish. And he just stood weirdly similar to Derek Fisher. And yeah, he had none of it. He sucked ass. Raylan sucks. He did nothing good after that for the rest of his career.
Aww. It is hilarious how much they hate him as well. And I've got a feeling like some of this is maybe built into that.
Because he sucked, yeah, because he bailed on them after
2012. So, yeah, he leaves after 2012 to actually go join the Heat as well. Again, this is like a very Kevin Durant kind of esque vibe, right? So they lose to them in the Eastern Conference Finals. Ray eventually goes and heads south to Miami. And, I mean, if you were one of his teammates and you looked at this performance, you're like, well, Ray cost us probably the 2010 finals. And after we lost in 2012 to the fucking Heat, he then went and joined the Heat. Yeah, actually, 100% fuck that guy. So I'm not going to argue with him. Finally, better than Lonzo Ball.
Lonzo was the best player in high school. He was the best player in college. You think you'll get to the pros and be like, I made it to the pros. Now I can be average. We're coming for everybody.
Coming for everybody, Tim. Coming for everybody. Let's go to the Pelicans. So this is weird because none of the young dudes actually did shit for either team in this game. This is an old heads game. In fact, the better than Lonzo Ball is actually Big Baby Davis with his 20 minutes, 6 points, 9 rebounds, 1 steal, because that's 6 points, 9 rebounds, and 1 steal more than Lonzo Ball's ever had in a playoff game.
What's still, Lonzo Ball got to do with this? He was about 9 when this happened. He was yet less than 9.
The point is, Tony Allen out there for 5 and a bit minutes, he's a minus 9. That's a tough one, Timmy. That's a tough one. One foul. The rest of it, 0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0. Nate Robb, 0 of 1 in this one in 3 minutes. The other ginger mamba, Scal, out there for 51 seconds. Does nothing. But even on the Lakers side, like Jordan Farmer, 0 of 3. Shannon Brown, 0 of 1. Machine, 0 of 2, but then comes up big with those free throws. So pretty crazy, pretty weird. So I'm going to give it to Big Baby Davis. It is weird, though, that it was really, it came down to like who you'd think it would come down to. Like basically each team starting 5. Bit of a Lamar in place of Andrew Bynum for the Lakers, and that was it. So away you go.
Most game sevens do.
Exactly. You got to go with who. Got to go with who got you there. The rotation goes down to 6, maybe 7, and away you go. But 2010, it was like a weird, crazy finals. I feel like because we got robbed out of any sort of Kobe LeBron finals by first Orlando in 2009, despite LeBron playing the series of his fucking life. And then, the Celtics just fucking took care of the Cavs in 2010.
In round 2.
Round 2, because they were the 4 seed. So, nice. All right, Tim, anything else you want to say about the 2010 time machine, Celtics-Lakers? How do you feel?
Just curious what you've got to talk about in the 2030 time machine when you're looking back 10 years to today. Pretty uneventful. Pretty uneventful.
Tough one. July 7. I mean, usually we're kind of just wrapping up free agency at this point too, aren't we? It's weird.
Yeah.
The drafts happened.
Well, it might be like a tribute series to the 33% of the league who died of coronavirus.
Jesus. All right, Timmy, this has been fantastic. Thank you for joining NBA Australia this week to talk about all this. This has been good. Let's wrap her up, boys. Pack her up. Not bad, not bad. All right, so thanks to Tim. Tim, do you want to spruik anything?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate what I said earlier, to unsubscribe from this channel and listen to the Brian Windhorst podcast about the decision.
Dig it.
Do it now. Waste no time.
Yeah, you can listen to another fat sack of shit talk shit about basketball. It'll be good. That's it for today. We are back next week. We've got another special guest next week. It's going to be a fun one too. Really looking forward to next week's one. Not looking forward to this week's one because this was, not great. But anyway, make sure you're following us on Twitter, Facey IGs. We're all over the socials all the time. Get around NBAAustralia.com. Go buy a fucking hoodie, you coward. Tim and everybody else out there. NBAAustralia.com/shop. Hoodies, t-shirts, a couple of stubby holders left. And check us a rating and review on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever app you use on your Android phone, if you can rate and review it. If you don't fucking do it and you're in Victoria, you got 6 more weeks of lockdown. You've got no fucking excuse. Do it. Or I'll fucking track you down and bash up. All right, big thanks to From Oslo for the intro and outro song. They don't exist anymore, but go check out their new band, House Hats. Running Out of Time's out now. Their album, that's fucking mint. Big thanks to Joshua Delarandis, Fascinated, Goldmines, Ramshackle Army, Iowa, Sex Shadow, Green, and Dozers. All the tunes you heard throughout the show, give them a smash on Bandcamp and Facey and Triple J on Earth. Remember, NBA Australia supports Australian bands, and they can't play shows at the moment, so go buy some of their merch too. All right, we're going to close out today's show with a deli review, and we will catch you next week, you dickheads. Tim, thanks for coming on. Say goodbye.
Bye.
It's NBA Australia saying, look after yourselves, would ya? And later, hosen. Oi, 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 how the fuck are you? Joel Mate Deli over here, just swinging by for my latest Corona lockdown pop culture review, eh? Because, yeah, look, don't know about you, but I'm pretty fucking happy laughing over here, actually, that your old mate Deli doesn't have to fly down to fucking Florida just to eat shitty food and hang out in a swamp full of Corona, eh? I mean, the only swamp of Corona I want is the one in our backyard outside the bloody cubby house, because that's where me and my best mate Donna smash all the Corona tins. Oh, I should clean that up, but, eh? Miss has been getting on me about it. Anyway, look, over the last week or so, the miss has been showing me and Donnie, when he's fucking showing his face for brekkie or whatever, taking a break from playing Fortnite, just showing me all the crazy numbers in Florida and shit, and I'm like, oh, fuck it, I'm actually stoked. I'll happily miss out on going to Space Mountain with a skin full of tins in order to stay home and eat my Avo toast in fucking poos, mate. So, yeah. With that in mind, the missus sat us all down on Saturday night and was like, righto, we're having a family night. Me and Donna were like, oh, fuck, here we go. We just wanted to smash a few tins, maybe watch Fast and Furious 8 again and shit. But the Sheila's like, nah, we're watching Hamilton so yous can learn about history properly. And I'm like, what's fucking Hamilton? She's like, oh, it's that play everyone loves about some bloke named Hamilton. And they rap. And I'm like, oh, I fucking hate the theatre. Me and my best mate Plugger used to bash the drama kids all the time at Maribara High School. I mean, there was only one, and his name was Jason. We actually became best mates by year 10, but still, well, it's just fucked, eh? So anyway, we watched it on Disney, and it's like about that Hamilton bloke, eh? Look, and I don't know. It was like, what was he doing? Saving the USA or some shit? Because to be honest, I've got no fucking idea who he is or what he did. And after watching all 3 fucking hours of it, I've still got no bloody clue what he did or whatever. Like, the rapping's cool and shit, and like, I love that it was a culturally diverse cast and everything, but at the same fucking time, I've got 0 points of reference, mate. Like, they were fucking fighting the Brits, and the French were involved somehow, and like, he read books and had a ponytail? Yeah, I don't fucking know. But anyway, I've got to say, the songs were catchy as. Like, I was just sitting there on my phone watching my beloved Maggie's lose to the Hate of Bloody Bombers. Fucking Donnie, love that one, eh? Fucking dickhead. Anyway, the song still grabbed me attention and stuff. So look, to be honest, it was kind of like just fine to have in the background. So it gets like 15 out of 10 Deli ones. Because look, what I gathered from it was that using your smarts for the greater good is great, but letting politics and personal vendettas get in your way is bad. But to be honest, I kind of learnt that with LeBron and Kyrie anyway, eh? So, yeah. Anyway, there you go. That's it for me for this week. I'll be back next week with another pop culture review for yous. I reckon, probably. Just as long as we don't get that rainer. Later, fuckers. Deli out.